Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy that airs every Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight we're going to listen to the humor of the late Myron Cohen. Myron Cohen passed away, a month or two ago, and we will be listening to some of his humor by special request. Those of us who were Beatles fans mainly remember Myron Cohen as somebody whom we had to wait through in order to get to the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. It always seemed as if there was an interminable stretch of Myron Cohen and Tessie O'Shea before the Beatles finally came on. But now that we have all mellowed, we can appreciate the talents of at least Myron Cohen, if not Tessie O'Shea. And Myron Cohen was a very gentle humorist. He was 25 years in the textile business, or the ladies' garment business. And when you're a textile salesman, you tell a lot of jokes to the buyers and things like that. And he started doing it professionally and became very successful at it. His stories mainly deal with ethnic Jewish older type people, and they're very gentle and very sweet. You've probably heard them all before, and probably all the people that heard them at the time he was telling them had heard them all before. But he tells them in a very gentle, very dignified sort of way. So, without any further ado, we will go to Myron Cohen's home turf, Miami Beach, Florida, to the Eden Rock. And here we go, Myron Cohen.
You know, night after night, no matter where I go, just such nice people as you see fit to bring the youngsters, and I like that. That's a great compliment. It means, of course, that I'm using good taste, and that's why I usually like to keep it. I'm no prude. I know all the other jokes. I sold goods for 25 years. Let me tell you a story I've been associated with for many, many years about the adorable little 8-year-old girl, quite like the one you might have in your very own heart, who walked into a bakery shop and said to the baker, "My mommy found a fly in a raisin bread." She said, "Bring back the fly, I'll give you a raisin." And here's an adorable little 5-year-old who says to his little boyfriend, "My father could beat your father." He says, "Big deal, so can my mother." And let me tell you about a little bitty guy in kindergarten. All day long he walks around the classroom, "My mommy gonna have a baby. My mommy gonna have a baby." She can't make him quit. She locks him in the closet, "Mommy gonna have a baby." Put him in a corner with a dunce cap, "Mommy gonna have a baby." Well, the following afternoon, and some of you little mothers in our audience have done this, and I've seen it happen. His little mother, a youngster, took his little hand and put it on her tummy, and he felt the movement of the unborn child. Well, for the next 2 days in class, he didn't open his mouth. The teacher began to wonder about this. She said, "Johnny, what about the baby?" She said, "I think my mommy ate it." Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday I was paid a visit by one of the nation's truly fine comedy minds, Little Maury Amsterdam. I want you to hear a couple of the stories he gave me. Two gentlemen out on the beach here. And one says, "You know, the way they got figured out with the astronauts, they don't start up to send them until they're sure that they're going to come back. So it's out of safety. So what the hell we have to worry from them? We got a few dollars. We'll invest in a capsule." You know, a capsule. "And we'll go to the sun. They're going to the moon. What the hell we need with them? We'll go to the sun. We'll take pictures. We'll buy property." The other guy says, "What, are you crazy? You'll come within 100,000 miles from the sun. It's so hot, it'll melt the capsule." And then with that, the other guy says, "So we'll go at night." I want you to hear about a little woman in her 80s who went to the doctor. She says, "I want you to give me a prescription for birth control pills." He says, "I've heard of everything. You're 87 years old. What do you want with those?" She says, "I didn't ask you no questions. I'm going to pay for the visit. Give me the prescription." So he gave it to her. 2 months later, he met her on the street. "How are the pills working?" She says, "I'm sleeping like a baby." He says, they're not sleeping pills. What in the world? What do you do with them? She says, I tell you the truth. In the morning when I wake up, I have breakfast with my grandchild. When she's not looking, I put two pills in her orange juice. I sleep like a baby. Which reminds me of the little woman in her 80s who meets the young doctor. He says, how do you feel, my dear? She says, I tell you the truth. Heute mit arthritis, with the bursitis, with the pressure, and the pain and the crisis, you know. And the stomach is not 100%. He says, why don't you come to my office to see me? She says, maybe next week when I'll feel better. You watch television as much as I do, I'm sure. And it's for that reason I want you to hear a little something that will become strangely familiar to you in a moment. Picture, if you will, a tall high on some Texan. A high on some Texan. Fine-looking guy. With a 10-gallon hat, the beautiful boots, the tight-fitting jacket with the patched pockets. The embroidered darts running up the back. Finds himself on the Lower East Side of New York, a predominantly Jewish neighborhood. He's obviously lost. Obviously. He walks up to the little Jewish peddler with a push cart and he says, can you all tell me where I am? And the little guy says, brother, you're not in Marlboro country. Not long ago in Vegas, an FBI man told me a story of a bank robber who had stolen $500,000. Now, they never found the money, but they caught up with this guy and put him in jail. A week later, he got a letter from his wife. Dear John, we're going to plow up the backyard and plant potatoes. He sent back a letter, don't plow up the backyard. A couple of days later, he got a letter, the FBI was here and plowed up the backyard. He sent back a letter, now you can plant potatoes. Earlier this evening, a lady reminded me of a story I did years and years ago. Haven't done it in many years. About the little woman who went to the butcher shop. She said to the butcher, Marty, today, if you'll be so kindly, I feel like Tavish will give me 6 lamb chops. So how much going to cost? Butcher says, for you? For you, $2 a pound. She says, for who? She says, you must be cockeyed drunk. I could get across the street by Schwartz, the butcher, for $1.40. He says, who the hell sent for you? Go by Schwartz. She says, he ain't got any. He says, if I wouldn't have any, I'd give you $1.25. And for you little ladies, here's a woman who says to another, look at your hair, for God's sake. Look how streaky. You know streaky? S-T-R-E-A-K-Y, streaky. She says, I bet you didn't shampoo already since God knows. In fact, it looks like a wick. The other one says, it happens, my dear friend, it is a wick. And the first one says, you know, you can't tell. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the George Washington Bridge, the bridge that goes from New York to Jersey. And picture a little guy driving a horse and wagon across the bridge. When he gets to the toll gate, the man at the gate says, 50 cents, please. He says, I thought it's only for automobiles, 50 cents. He says, no, any vehicle. No, he says, well, listen, what are you going to do? So he backed up. Went about 1/4 mile back, unhitched the horse, put him in a wagon, and I pulled the wagon to the toll gate. The guy says, 50 cents, please. He says, talk to the driver. Let me tell you about a businessman who, in filing his income tax return, deducted $500 as a bad debt because he claimed he'd loaned his partner $500 and he'd never gotten it back. Well, eventually it was called down to the Internal Revenue Service. And the revenue agent says, there's got to be something wrong here, mister, because your partner was here with five witnesses who've testified they saw him give you back the $500. He says, is that so? Well, I'm going to show you what a goddamn liar is my partner. I never loaned it to him. And this fellow wrote a letter to the Internal Revenue Service saying, on my 1962 return, I cheated. I've had a guilty conscience ever since and haven't been able to sleep. Enclosed, you'll find my check in the amount of $500, and if I still can't sleep, I'll send you the balance. I must tell you, a few months ago, in New York, I was privileged to entertain 3,500 ladies and gentlemen representing the National Association of Insurance Agents. This is true. And I boned up on the subject, feeling that the thing that was closest to their lives would be interesting to them. I hope you think this is funny. About the insurance agent who was bringing a check for $25,000 to the widow. Husband had passed on. While there, he decided he was going to try and sell her the very same policy. She thought a few minutes. She says, maybe I ought to take it because my husband was lucky with it. And you know, there are men in this world who live to beat insurance companies. They devote their lives to beating insurance companies out of large sums of money. And this is a man who's done that for 20 years. Never lost a case. A phony, a crook, and a thief. There wasn't a lawyer in the world that didn't know this guy was a crook, but they could never catch up with him. But now he's got the biggest case of his life. $250,000. They bring him into the courtroom on a stretcher. He's twisted up like a pretzel. They lift him off the stretcher, put him in the witness stand. The battery of defense attorneys try to break him down and they can't move him. He knows the questions before they ask him. Shot. Well, he wins the case. Out in the corridor, after the trial is over, the attorney brings him a check for $250,000. He says, we know you're a thief, a crook, and a phony. Here's your check. But I'm warning you, as of this minute, there'll be a man on your tail for the rest of your natural life. Till the day you die, he'll be with you. And the first day, and we know this will happen, the first day that your hand straightens out, mister, you not only lose the check, but you go to jail for the rest of your life. Well, he says, that's interesting. It's been a rough week. Tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to stay home and rest up. And then one morning, a big limousine is coming. They're going to lift me into the limousine, drive me out to Kennedy Airport. A plane will be waiting. They'll lift me into the plane, fly me up to Montreal in Canada. They lift me out of the plane into a big limousine and drive me to the shrine of St. Anne de Beaupre. And if you happen to be standing there alongside of me, you're going to see the biggest damn miracle you ever saw in your life. I must tell you about a little couple, married well over 50 years, children all married off, well provided for. But now an anniversary is coming up. And the mother says, you know, Arnie, we ought to have a union voice at a party. And it will invite the kiddies. They'll bring presents. And like this, we'll enjoy. So it's arranged. That Saturday night, the doorbell rings. In comes the daughter with the son-in-law, the kiddies. Oh, Daddy, I'm so sorry. You know, the baby wasn't feeling well and I didn't get a chance to get downtown to buy you a gift. He said, that's all right, sweetheart. You here. All right, hell with it. You here. 5 minutes later, in comes the eldest son, the doctor. Gee, Dad, I hate myself. I was at the hospital all day, you know, with the operation. I didn't get a chance to buy you a gift. What do you want? You're my children. You hear? You came? No, the hell with it. Don't worry. 5 minutes later, in comes the youngest. You know, with his wife and the kiddies. Gee, Dad. You know, I was in court all day and I didn't... Oh, look, we here, the whole family, to sit down to a fantastic meal Mom had been cooking all week. Now they get to the dessert and coffee. Papa stands up and he says, "Children, we here together. It's a happy occasion, but it is the truth. I must tell you that you live in Calais all the years. You mother and me, we never got married." The elder son says, "Dad, you mean we're..." He says, "Uh-huh, and the cheapest." I want to favor the request of a lovely lady who took the trouble to call me upstairs, and I promised I would do it, and before I forget about it, I want to do the story about a woman who went to a portrait painter, a man of great reputation. She says, "I heard you're a very fine painter from pictures. I heard you practically the modern Picasso." You know, the painter. "I would like you should make me an oil." "Oil." O-I-L, oil. She says, "Don't be with me fancy. If I ain't got dimples, don't put me. I don't want to look younger. I don't want to look older. Just see if you could capture the real me." Oh, he says, "That'll be quite simple, of course." "Well," she says, "it's nice to hear like this. Now, if you happen to have a little paint left over, is it possible you could paint me on both wrists gorgeous diamond bracelets with rubies and diamonds and hemels? Hemels. It's not a sickness, it's a gem. You'll make my necklace also with the rubies and the hemels and the diamonds, and for the hair, a terrari. Is that possible?" He says, "Of course, there'll be no problem with that. Why would you want that?" And she says, "Well, I'll tell you the truth. My husband is a louse. And when I'll die, I'm sure the next week he's going to get married again. I want his next wife should drop dead looking for the jewelry." Any one of you would be reminded, as I was, of a story, because there is so much gin rummy played on the beach. Here are four men playing gin rummy. One loses $800 and drops dead right at the table. So out of respect to the deceased, they finish the game standing up. However, a situation presents itself. Somebody has to tell the wife. Nobody wants to, of course. So they draw lots. One fellow is selected and the other two say, "Please be careful and break the news. It's a serious..." He says, "With me, you ain't got with anything to worry. I'm a discreet boy." Goes over to the house, knocks on the door, walks in. He says, "Sweetie, your husband just lost $800 playing Jim Rome." She said, "He should drop dead." He says, "He did." There's a little man in the city of New York, all of us in show business adore. This is one of the most beautiful little men that ever lived. He owns the stage delicatessen, Little Max Asness. It's on 7th Avenue between 53rd and 54th Streets. We go there. He's a great host, has a great sense of humor. I was having breakfast at the stage delicatessen. Little Max told me he had a waiter one time. He ated his guts. Just the way he said, "I ated his guts." So I gave him a $2 raise, and the next week I fired him. So the waiter came to me and says, "I thought you liked me. You gave me a raise." He says, "I ate your guts. I only gave you a raise. You should lose a better job." And let me tell you about a Martian. We don't know whether there is life on Mars or not. Even the scientists don't know. It's reasonable to assume that a Martian could be walking around on the street. A fellow walked up to him and said, "You're a Martian, aren't you?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Do they all look like you?" He says, "Uh-huh." "Do they all have googly eyes?" He says, "Yeah." "Do they all have antennas poked out of their heads?" He says, "Uh-huh." "Do they all wear little round hats?" He says, "No, only the Orthodox." You know, coming out of the commercial world as I do, you can readily understand why it is I love to repeat a typical business-type story. Incidentally, one which may be applied to any industry anywhere in the nation. But of course, having been so close to the garment industry and the textile world for so many, many years, I say it happened there. 25 years of his life, this little man found it possible to arrive for work every morning at 9 o'clock. Just as the good Lord made the day, he walked in for his work at 9 in the morning. You could set your watch by his appearance. And suddenly, one morning, after all these 25 years of punctual 9 o'clock appearances, he walked in at 10. Two black eyes, bloody nose, ear hanging, lip torn, clothes ripped and disheveled. Boss says, "What the hell happened to you?" He says, "Oh, fell down all flight stairs, almost got killed." The boss says, "This took an hour?" You know, I had a boss like that once. And speaking of the dress industry, you're so nice, I can't resist telling you about two partners. Things are rough. They decide to split. They cut it right down the middle. One stays in the dress industry, the other one goes out to California with what's left of his money. Winds up in the motion picture business. Believe it or not, in a year, he's a fantastic tycoon. Now, his former partner, the dress man, goes to visit with him, walks into a magnificent office, sumptuous. The last word in elegance. His former partner, feet up on the desk, a cigar a mile long. He says, "You look to me like a big shot in pictures." He says, "You got them tootin'. I only make epics." "If the picture not going to cost me $100 million, I don't start up with it. I use maybe 100,000 extras a day." She says, "100,000 extras? What can it be?" "Well," he says, "I make vestments. I use maybe 50,000 Indians, 50,000 cowboys." "Cowboys." He says, "How much you pay him a day?" He says, "$100 a day." He said, "You're a cock-a-liar." "No, it's honest to God. $100 a day, 100,000 extra. How could you afford it?" He says, "We use real bullets." I must tell you about the youngster born to one of the nation's wealthiest families. At an early age, he begins to show a feeling for the world of opera. With all of that wealth behind him, it's made possible for him to have the finest in voice, culture, elocution, everything to make for a great career in the event he shows promise. Well, believe it or not, when he gains his maturity, he's begun to carve a niche for himself in the world of operatic music, beautiful voice. And as a result, he's invited to sing at La Scala in Milan. Now, the opera world knows this to be the truth, and I'm sure you do. There is no opera audience anywhere in the world quite like the one you'll find at La Scala, if for no other reason than that they are born, they live, and they die with the opera. They'll beg, borrow, and steal to get into the opera house. They go to the opera to listen. You might come to Milan with a fantastic reputation 2 minutes after you've opened your mouth. That audience knows whether you can sing or whether you're a fake. Now, the opera this particular evening is I Pagliacci, in the aria Veste di Giubba. And this young man pours his heart and soul into the aria, so much so that when he finishes, the entire audience rises as if one. "Encore, you must sing again," and he does. When he finishes it for the second time, "Again, you must sing." This happens 8 times. They're screaming for the 9th encore. He walks to the footlights and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, little do you realize what a thrill it is to be accepted at La Scala as you've received me. Please let the opera continue. You know I've already sung the aria 8 times. What do you expect of me? A little Italian man from the top balcony screamed down at me and said, "You dirty son of Mangogna! You gonna sing it a goddamn thing until you get it right!"
And there you go. The great old stories of Myron Cohen. This was taken from a record entitled It's Not a Question, which is sort of strange because there's no joke on this on this record which has that as a punchline. But at any rate, who's going to quibble, right? There you go. So that was the humor of Myron Cohen. Next week, we will be saluting Mom with a collection of comedy having to do with Mom for Mom's Day, for Mother's Day, which we'll be following. And then the week after that, we'll be listening to some humor having to do with the Beatles. That's going to be a neat show. I'm going to look forward to doing that. What else is there to tell you? The address, Bob Claster with a C, Funny Stuff, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. Nothing new in the way of comedy on television to recommend. So I guess I have nothing left to say other than to thank you for listening and to remind you once again to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. It may come in handy. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful weekend.